Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up tomorrow. Krista Tippett, Friday, Henry Louis Gates. A lot to listen for every morning at 10. And we continue now with our coverage of the U.S. Senate race in Connecticut to replace Christopher Dodd, who is retiring. We have interviewed the presumptive Democratic nominee, Richard Blumenthal, and two of the three Republicans, Rob Simmons and Linda McMahon. And we complete our first round with Republican hopeful Peter Schiff. Many of you know Schiff as the stock brokerage owner and financial pundit who correctly called the housing and credit bubbles as far back as 2006 and predicted they would cause a severe recession while others scoffed. He was here to talk about one of his books about that earlier. He also predicted government would overreact and make the situation worse, and that's at the heart of his campaign. He was also an economics advisor to the 2008 presidential campaign of Ron Paul. Peter, thank you for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on.
How much of a Ron Paul guy are you? Do you want to abolish the Federal Reserve and everything?
Well, in an ideal world, I would. I mean, I wish the Federal Reserve had never been created in the first place. But the problem that we have right now is that we can't simply abolish the Federal Reserve without, you know, an idea of what's going to replace it. I mean, I would be more fearful of turning over the Fed's powers to Congress than leaving them with the Fed. Even though the Fed has done a horrific job, I think Congress could do an even worse job. So I think more realistically, if we can try to reform the Fed, make it more independent the way it used to be, take away a lot of the powers that it's usurped over the years, bring it back to its original mission. You know, not only was the Federal Reserve not able to buy, mortgage-backed securities like it's buying now, but originally the Federal Reserve couldn't even buy Treasury debt. Originally, Federal Reserve notes were backed 100% by commercial paper and 40% by gold. So I would like to restore the Federal Reserve back to its roots if we can't abolish it completely, because I'm very fearful of giving Nancy Pelosi the printing press.
Should I assume that you would have voted not to reconfirm Ben Bernanke as Fed chairman?
Yeah, he has absolutely done a horrific job as Fed chairman. He has done everything wrong. He hasn't really done anything right. The only reason that I might have voted to confirm him, although I doubt that I would have, is the fear that it's possible that there is somebody that could even do a worse job and that Ben Bernanke might actually find that individual and nominate him. So it's more of a question of the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. But there are a lot of people who voted to reconfirm him, singing his praises, despite the fact that there's nothing he's done that's praiseworthy.
Let's talk a little bit more about Bernanke, because I think the consensus of most economists today is that Bernanke's aggressive intervention in the banking crisis saved us from going into a major depression instead of just a bad recession, making money very cheap and, yes, bailing out the banks so that money wouldn't become worthless and the entire system collapse. The global bank runs had begun. Scary deflation had begun. You don't believe that?
No. I mean, remember, these are the same economists that I was debating for years when I was forecasting the events of 2008, and they said it could never happen, that I was crazy. So they obviously don't understand economics, and they also don't understand that you don't want to give credit for to the arsonist for putting out the fire. Ben Bernanke, along with Alan Greenspan, created the financial crisis. So to try to say that they saved us, first of all, you don't give credit in that situation. But I also don't think that what they did saved us. I think they actually made the problems worse. I think we're going to suffer dramatically in 2011 or 2012 because of the actions Ben Bernanke took. He didn't save us from one crisis. He's actually created an even worse crisis. It's the exact same way the Federal Reserve saved us from the recession of 2001. When the NASDAQ bubble burst, the Federal Reserve did the same thing that it did in 2008 after the real estate bubble burst. They stimulated the economy with cheap credit and easy money, and they inflated the housing bubble, and they laid the foundation. They created the disaster of 2008. Now they've made the same mistake. We are in for a horrific economic collapse. You just said that if Bernanke saved the dollar. He didn't. He sealed the dollar's fate. The dollar is going to be destroyed because of what Bernanke did. Had Bernanke allowed the free market to work and allowed the malinvestments of the real estate bubble to be liquidated, a lot of people would have lost money. But the money itself would have maintained its value, and the economy would have restructured, and we could have had a lasting economic recovery. Now all we've done is exacerbate the underlying imbalances in our economy. We've set ourselves up for a bigger crash, and I think the next crisis is going to be a currency crisis where the dollar loses its value, and then prices go through the roof, and interest rates go ballistic.
Connecticut Senate hopeful Peter Schiff, my guest on WNYC. So others might say, that's nice theoretical economics, but it doesn't take real people suffering into account or the risk of a 10-year cycle of deflation and depression before a real recovery began if you left the market to its own. Isn't there a way to cushion the blow and establish an economic bottom while still revamping our economy for more savings?
No, that is not going to work. Those were the mistakes that Hoover and Roosevelt made that created the Great Depression. You know, I would rather have...
Wait, weren't Hoover and Roosevelt the opposite because Hoover did nothing and Roosevelt intervened?
No, Hoover did not do nothing. Hoover did anything but nothing.
Or too little. People say he too little.
No, he didn't. He did too much. Hoover did exactly what people think he didn't do. He did not listen to the advice of his Secretary of the Treasury, who told him to stay out of it. He propped things up. He bailed people out. He had his own stimulus. He was the George Bush of his day. And unfortunately, when Roosevelt came in, he followed in those misguided footsteps and expanded Herbert Hoover's programs and made the Depression worse. What I want is to have a quick market correction like we had in 1920. We had a downturn in 1920 after the First World War ended. We had an economic contraction that was worse than 1929. The stock market dropped more. The economy contracted more. But because the government did absolutely nothing, it was over in a year, and then we had growth. It was because of Hoover's intervention that we had that depression, and we've done the same thing again. And you know,
there is a small minority of economists who say that FDR made the depression worse. But you want to run for Senate on that historical notion? Do you think that's going to be popular in Connecticut?
Well, remember, I was one of the only economists who predicted the collapse of the housing bubble, the effect that it would have on the financial institution. I was a lone voice saying that Fannie and Freddie were going to go bankrupt years ago, that General Motors was going to go bankrupt. So I said a lot of things that the vast majority of economists didn't believe, yet they all happened. So I think I have much more credibility in making economic forecasts than do, you know, just about any other economist in the country. So, yes, I think I can get elected telling the truth, and I think I can explain to the people of Connecticut why I have an understanding of these issues, and the conventional wisdom is wrong, because the conventional wisdom has been wrong. And believe me, when the election comes around in November, there will be a lot more unemployed people than there are today. The government's efforts at stimulating the economy will fail. They are going to make this economy worse. This recession is going to span the entirety of Barack Obama's presidency. The economy will be in much worse shape when he leaves office than when he entered office. And at some point, people are going to have to understand that we're doing the wrong thing, that the advice that we're getting from Wall Street and from Keynesian economists is dead wrong. Have to start listening to people like me, because people with my perspective that understand economics, that understand Austrian economics, we've gotten it right. We've gotten it right over the years, and eventually people are going to understand it.
You saw the bubble in the making, but didn't that bubble and meltdown come partly as a result of the SEC deregulating, raising the allowable leverage ratios for investment banks in 2004? Suddenly, because the banks lobbied for it, they could leverage at 30-1, and that deregulation set up the crash with no cushion except the taxpayers. True or false?
What you have to understand, and the reason that I predicted it at the time, is that they didn't deregulate enough when they did that, because they left on deposit insurance. See, the reason that we had that Glass-Steagall in there was because Roosevelt put in deposit insurance so that if you put money in a bank and the bank fails, depositors don't lose.
You would undo the FDIC bank deposit insurance?
That, Because you have to have both. I personally think we'd have a sounder banking system if the government didn't guarantee the deposits, because then depositors would be more cautious about where they put their money, and banks would be more cautious about the loans that they made, because they would know that the public cared what they did with their money. Right now, when people put money in the bank, no one cares what the banks do with it. No one cares how much risk they take, because they know that if the banks fail, they're going to get paid back anyway. The banks know this, so they take lots of risk. That's the reason that we put restrictions on what the banks can do with insured deposits, because we took away all the market mechanism. So,
but now you're really going to scare mom and pop. The average investor, I don't mean investor like Wall Street investor, the average family that puts money in the bank has considered the basic FDIC insurance one of the bedrocks of stability in our economic system for 70 years.
It's one of the reasons that there's so much risk on bank balance sheets. It's one of the reasons that there's so many bad loans out there. It's called moral hazard. Now, you know, there was a time in this country when bank accounts were not insured and the banking system was sounder. Even during the Great Depression, only 1% of the money on deposit in banks was actually lost. It was very little. We lose more than that every year now due to the inflation that the government creates. And there are other countries that have abolished insured bank deposits, and it has been a positive result. I mean, you can look around the world. They did it in New Zealand. So, you know, it is something that sounds good on paper, but in practice, it's not good, because it creates moral hazards. It creates problems. And you have to understand that markets are self-regulating. But when the government comes in and interferes, like the reason that Wall Street was so leveraged up is because the government made it so easy for them to do it. The government took all the risk out of the leverage. The government guaranteed mortgages. The government, you know, had this Greenspan put the idea that if you screw up on Wall Street, the Federal Reserve is going to bail you out. That was not the free market. That was government. That was government intervention that caused that reckless behavior. The free market would have curtailed it, because people would have been worried about risk. They would have worried about losing money.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with my guest Peter Schiff, Republican hopeful for the U.S. Senate in Connecticut to replace Christopher Dodd. You say markets are self-correcting. Isn't it utopian to think the market will cure all our woes? Isn't it sort of magical thinking? Isn't it more realistic to say the market is good for many things and not so good for some other things?
No, I think what's utopianistic or unrealistic is to assume that human beings passing legislation can do something that the market can't. Because that has led to disaster every time it's been tried. And the problem is, the people that we elect to political office generally are passing legislation not even for market reasons, but for political reasons, for political gain, what gets them votes. So if we're going to put these decisions in the hands of vote-seeking politicians and think that they're going to do the right thing, there is no historical precedent for that.
That's democracy,
right? All the precedent is that they do the wrong thing.
So where are you on health reform? Do you think market solutions can solve that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the only reason that health care is so expensive or education is so expensive is because of government involvement. If it wasn't for the government, health care costs would be falling, just like cell phones and laptop computers and plasma TVs. That's what free markets do. They bring down prices and they bring up quality. Where it's not happening, it's because government has interfered. And there are so many ways that the government has interfered to artificially push up the price of medicine.
But let me push you on that, because
that will cost nothing and it will cause health prices to plunge and college tuitions to plunge almost overnight.
But let me push you on this comparison with healthcare and plasma TVs. I mean, how is there a model for the market providing health insurance for sick people without government rules? By definition, sick people will cost insurance company more than any affordable premium, won't they?
Well, but in insurance, you don't buy insurance when you're sick. You buy insurance when you're healthy, and therefore it's not expensive. You see, you know, insurance is not there to pay for medical costs, right? You know, you pay for medical costs yourself. Insurance is in case you get sick in the future and there's a huge thing, like you get cancer,
right,
or you get a brain tumor. Insurance is not there to pay so you go to the doctor when you get the flu,
but let's go up the ladder on this a little bit. Would you say then that Medicare is necessary because senior citizens are unprofitable to insure as a group because of their age and health risk likeliness?
No,
so a free market insurance system would at least spurn the elderly?
No, it wouldn't. They wouldn't be unprofitable. They would have to pay higher rates. If somebody waited until they were 60 to buy insurance, obviously the policy would be expensive. I mean, if they bought it when they were younger, that wouldn't be the case.
But wouldn't the health insurance?
That's the same thing.
But it's not life insurance. Wouldn't the health insurance go up when you turn 60?
It depends on the policy that you have. You can buy a policy where they can't do that. You have to negotiate it when you're younger. You know, it's the same thing. Look, you know, insurance is all about discrimination. It's all about pre-existing conditions. That's what the business is there for. I mean, you can't buy fire insurance once your house is already burned down. I mean, isn't that unfair? I mean, somebody's house burns down and they can't get fire insurance. Well, you got to buy your fire insurance when your house is not on fire.
But the market
otherwise,
is
no one will sell it to you.
But the Democratic proposal is that the market has shown that younger, healthier people who are uninsured at work won't buy insurance. That's why they want to require everybody buy insurance.
Yeah, they would buy it if it was still inexpensive like it was before the government got involved. You know, back in the 1960s, my father used to sell health insurance, and he says that the premiums were about $25 a year. I mean, it was cheap. You know, now it's expensive because of what the government has done. The best thing that we can do to help bring down the cost of health care and health insurance is to separate health insurance from employment. The only reason that people get their health insurance from their jobs is because of the tax code. We don't get life insurance, we don't get fire insurance, we don't get car insurance from our jobs. We get health insurance, and that's because of the tax code. What I propose to do is allow individuals to opt out of employer-provided health care, to take the cash tax-free instead. So if your employer gives you $10,000 worth of health insurance and you don't have to pay any taxes on that, you can tell your employer, no thank you, just give me the $10,000 in cash tax-free instead. And then you can take that money and buy yourself a catastrophic health insurance plan that you want without government mandates as to what it covers. Plenty of young people will buy it because it will be really inexpensive.
But
then
plenty
of
young
people can take the rest of the money and keep it for themselves.
But plenty of young people won't. Then there'll probably be even fewer healthier people in the health insurance pool, and it would be more expensive for those at risk of being sick. No?
No, but then you could make the same argument for all sorts of insurance. You can make the same argument for car insurance or auto insurance or life insurance.
Auto insurance is required.
No, but you're saying, look,
should we undo the requirement?
Not all young people buy life insurance, but life insurance still works. Health insurance worked fine before the government got involved and screwed it all up.
Should we undo the requirement to buy car insurance?
Well, that's not a federal requirement. And not all states require it. And the thing about requirements to buy automobile insurance is they require you to buy liability insurance. There isn't a single state that requires you to buy collision insurance, right? And what the health insurance is they're requiring you to buy insurance for yourself, not for the damage you do to other people. There is a huge, big difference between the two.
We're going to run out of time soon, but to go back to what you said about Medicare, would you abolish Medicare or Social Security?
Well, I never would have enacted those programs to begin with. I think that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. It's just like what Bernie Madoff did. It can't work. It is unsustainable. It is a gigantic disaster waiting to happen. That said, you know, given the fact that there are now so many people that depend on it, that never would have depended on it if we never started it, we have to find a better solution to unwinding this monstrosity. But it cannot work. And if we're going to deny that it can't work, and we're going to continue to pretend that it can, we will bankrupt the nation, we will destroy our currency, and then the Social Security benefits will be worthless because the people who get the checks won't be able to buy anything.
Let me give
and
you
that
an open
crisis is going to happen soon unless we handle it, you know, right now.
Let me give you an open mic for a minute. Anything you want to say to the voters of Connecticut?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I think I'm the only person that's running in this race in either party that actually is going to make a difference if he gets elected. I want to go to Congress to put an end to runaway spending in government. I want to slash federal spending. The government is now twice as big as it was 10 years ago. It's growing like a cancer. It is bleeding the life out of the private sector. We've got to put a stop to it. The more the government stimulates the economy, the weaker the economy is going to get. The more bills that they pass to create jobs, the more jobs they are going to destroy. They have waged war on our economy. The government is winning and the country is losing. And we have to do something about it because
right.
The real economic crisis is not in the past. It's in our future, and we need to stop it.
Peter Schiff, running for the Republican U.S. Senate nomination in Connecticut to replace Christopher Dodd. He was an economic advisor to the Ron Paul for President campaign, has a stock brokerage and books, including, I forgot the name of your last book.
Crash Proof.
There you go.
How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse.
Thank you.
Wrote it in 2006.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And we have put links to all four of our interviews with the Connecticut candidates for U.S. Senate on our webpage. If you want to hear them all, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And coming up in a minute, we will meet Zeta Elliott, author of A Wish After Midnight, a novel that takes an inner-city Brooklyn teenager back in time.